time for You Oughta Know, a weekly conversation about all things automotive with your host, Toby Edmonds.
Well, Toby will be calling any moment now, and I'm just wanting to remind you that this is a show that is intending to provide sort of deep background information as well as perhaps answers to things that are fairly simple, it seems, but difficult to understand. We've been talking over the past year or so about all kinds of topics having to do with your vehicle, whether it's a truck or an automobile, whether it's old or new. We've been looking at ways in which make you a person with a better relationship with that vehicle. Because really, when it comes right on down to it, what tends to happen, particularly the longer you have a vehicle, a truck or car, as you enter into a kind of a relationship with that vehicle, something that you very often use on a regular basis, you see on a regular basis, you communicate with on a regular basis. And I'm not trying to anthropomorphize the vehicle by saying that that car is going to be thought of by being given a name as also a person with a personality. But what we've discovered, I think I've discovered, and we'll see what Toby has to say about that in a few minutes, that can't happen. Here we go.
Good morning, Mike.
So I've just been talking while waiting for the call about whether vehicles have personalities, and stopping short of anthropomorphizing them, what your opinion is.
You know, that I've had quite a few cars in my life in which I would be willing to bet that, yeah, there is a personality present there. The one that comes to mind the most is a 1981 Volkswagen Rabbit diesel that I had that had, on multiple occasions, tried to kill me. I called Christine.
Okay. All right. I shouldn't laugh at that.
No, it's okay. It's kind of funny.
So tell us more.
It's the very first car that I really, no, I shouldn't say, it was the second car that I really learned how to work on. And it was just through little things like I could open up the rear hatch and it would sit there and just stay open all by itself for the longest time. But as soon as I got close to it and actually started to go, you know, to get something out of the inside of the hatch, suddenly the rear hatch struts would fail and the deck lid would come crashing down on my head. There was a time that I was doing a wheel bearing and couldn't get there's a big snap ring in there and I couldn't get the snap ring out. And I was wrestling with this thing for forever. Finally, it came out and came flying up and hit me right in the face.
Oh.
Some of those diesels were also known for, they had kind of an after design add-on through Volkswagen. It wasn't an aftermarket thing, but it was through Volkswagen. It was a oil baffle that you put up into the on the upper side of the valve cover, underneath the valve cover, to prevent the oil from splattering up and getting sucked into the intake. Because what would happen is the oil would, as the engine was running, it would actually suck oil up into the intake, and then it would burn the oil instead of the fuel. So when you took your foot off into the throttle, it would just run away with you in the car. It would keep burning, and it even though your foot was off the throttle. And I went through many a red light with my foot off the throttle, but it was still burning oil, and we went right through the intersection before I got the baffle put on there. So, yeah, there was multiple occasions in which that car tried to do away with me.
Oh, okay. So I guess the real thing is that if something happens that is not pleasant associated with a vehicle, then do we sort of drift into thinking badly about it? I guess that's the part that I wonder.
Oh, absolutely. You know, it's part of human nature. I mean, there's lots of things about cars that that, you know, unless you're super familiar with cars, and even I knew what this car was doing. You know, I knew, you know, what happened when I took my foot off the throttle, but yet the engine continued to accelerate. I mean, I knew what was going on, and even I still contributed those types of things to the fact that the car, you know, quote unquote, hated me. You know, so it's you know, I think it's just human nature to try and explain away things that we don't necessarily understand into terms of more of an emotional quotient where, you know, this car does this every single morning with me or, you know, blah, 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 blah. And we do. And we do explain it away as part of the car's personality, so to say. And especially if it's negative things, it's and I've seen both sides of the spectrum doing what, you know, I do. I've seen people so emotionally attached to their car that when something terrible happens to it, it's very traumatic for them. But on the flip side, I've also seen people hate their cars so much that, you know, it's everything in their willpower to not try and drive it off of a cliff. So it's, you know, we tend to put personalities and we give our cars names and, we take their little quirks that they do, because all cars have their little quirks, and we try to explain it away as part of that, like that car's personality. Just like I'm not the type of person necessarily to name my cars, just because that would be a lot of names. But even I, you know, the car, the Volkswagen Rabbit diesel, even I gave that car a name, you know, just because it would do things that was reminiscent of a particular type of a stereotype for a car, you know, Stephen King. So I think it's definitely human nature to try and do that.
Okay, all right. So now that we've passed that, we could just make a few comments about the strange change of the weather. It's very warm. It's very wet. And is it time to take the snow tires off and get ready for spring?
At this point in time, I'm hesitant to make that call. It kind of seems like it. I mean, this weekend, it definitely got colder, and I was kind of looking forward to the weather evening out at least. Kind of tired of this, the wet and then the freeze and the ice everywhere. I'd much rather just have snow and cold. Quite honestly. So I was kind of hoping that the weather was going to finally get a little bit colder and kind of even out for us. But then yesterday hit and it got warm and windy all over again.
Right. So, okay. Well, we'll just have to deal with it as we want.
Right. Because as soon as I go on air and say, yeah, totally take your snow tires off, that's when it's going to dump 4 feet of snow.
Sure. Right. Okay, so did you have a topic in mind today that you wanted to bring up? I know you had a great time with Lee last week.
Yeah, we talked about the difference between a diagnostic versus scanning a code. I know that most people are familiar with the little handheld types of scanners that you can get online, Amazon, eBay, parts stores, whatever. So we were talking about the difference between a code reader versus an actual scan tool that's used for actually diagnosing a problem with the vehicle. We talked about that as well as the difference between a diagnostic and inspection, you know, and what a scan tool is actually capable of reading and diagnosing as far as the car's symptoms.
So I was curious, extending up perhaps on that, just mentioning that I had an opportunity to take a quick trip to Tucson. I was down there for a couple of days, and Tucson is a sunny place, and it also has a well-developed, extraordinarily well-developed a system of both large-scale and individual solar panel installations. And this leads, of course, to that great situation where if you happen to have an electric vehicle or even a hybrid that has a good amount of electric power capability, it can cost you almost Well, very little, especially if you're drawing the power from your own solar panel installation to operate that vehicle. And I also like to check, for example, to see what is happening with older Teslas. And I found that there are now, since the Teslas have been made for a number of years, you can go back to about 2013, and for under $50,000, you can find a Tesla for sale, varying situations and so on. But I was struck by the accompanying descriptions people had, since if you happen to be in California, there are these superchargers that are available free to your use, as long as someone else isn't sitting there sucking up the electricity, that leaves you with no fuel charge on your vehicle at all.
Really?
Yes. And I was fascinated by the owner's descriptions. In some cases, people had owned the vehicles for a few years, and they talked about the variety of repairs that Tesla had done. And when you were talking about scanning tools, et cetera, I think it seems to me that Tesla may be up there amongst those automobile manufacturers that has the most continuing contact with their vehicles. I know to extend, there are software upgrades that are pushed through to the vehicles as improvements occur. And I wondered if there are other vehicles that are doing that, where the manufacturer basically will upgrade the software, you know, in your vehicle, because in the past we've talked about computers, but, for example, do over-the-air upgrades rather than having it done in a shop seems to be an interesting change.
It is a very interesting change, and it's also a very convenient change for most customers. Tesla is the only one that I'm aware of that does it over the air and just does it automatically. You can absolutely go in and, you know, there are numerous repairs to vehicles that can be made simply by upgrading software.
Okay.
And really what you know, most of these upgrades are, you know, it's just like your computer. What you're doing is you're going in there and, you know, maybe it's a bug that needs to be fixed. It's a glitch in how the software was written. Or maybe it even comes down to just changing the parameters of what that computer control module it sees as an error in the system. You know, maybe they made the parameters a little bit too tight, and it was always triggering a warning to the car, thus triggering a check engine light of some sort. So instead of going in there and replacing that part or upgrading that part, they simply just changed the parameters on what would cause a trigger for the system to recognize the problem. But as of right now, most manufacturers, you have to go to the dealer. They will physically plug the car in and download the software into the car. It's not something that happens automatically like it does with Tesla that I'm aware of. And by that, I mean, I know that the major manufacturers still do it that way. I just didn't know if maybe some of the higher end cars that maybe I'm not quite so intimately familiar with might do it that way, the same way that Tesla does.
Sure.
But I do know
right.
that the major ones do, you know, you have to go in there and you have to actually plug the car in. Now, if the car is under warranty, lots of times, under manufacturer warranty, lots of times these software upgrades, as long as there's actually a problem, are free. They're free of charge.
Right.
However, if the vehicle is outside of warranty, to do these software updates, there is going to be a charge for that. It is my understanding that since Tesla, one of the ways Tesla tries to cut back on costs of their vehicles, as well as try to get them out to consumers as quickly as possible, is instead of spending years on research and development, like you kind of noted a little bit earlier, they use their customers and their cars that the customers drive as their R&D. And that's why, you know, like you made the comment that Tesla really seems to stay in constant contact and constant touch with the vehicles. And that's why, because they're still using those vehicles that are out there being used every day by consumers as part of their R&D for that vehicle.
Well, I'm interested you described that, because what comes to my mind is this may be maybe a sign of what will be happening in the future. My sense right now is that there's this thin connection to the owner of a vehicle from the manufacturer for most vehicles. I mean, we've been used to getting things in the past that might be an upgrade notice in the mail, or we're in contact with a dealer or a service provider, and it's not direct, it's not clear. But Tesla has moved this to a whole different level, and admittedly, this is a high-end vehicle. But I'm wondering, as they produce their lower cost vehicles, whether this will also continue and signal a way for manufacturers to have a different relationship directly with the vehicle and the owner in the future.
You know, I think it definitely could. I don't think that it would work. That type of method would work for every manufacturer. Tesla is definitely a huge player in the market, but they still don't have the sales volume that a lot of other, say, like Ford or Chevy does.
Right.
So it would be interesting to see whether or not Tesla keeps that same type of strategy as they do continue to grow, and maybe even perhaps reach the same type of sales volume as some of the big three do. So, right now I think it's actually a brilliant way to run a car company. I think that personal touch is really what most Tesla owners really value about their cars. They like feeling like they're part of something. They like feeling like they have an instant tie with the manufacturer. They like feeling like they're in communication, and that, you know, things are being updated and kept, you know, in working order for them, and that it's convenient too. They don't have to go into the dealer in order to have it done. I think that's a really great technique, and actually I think it shows a lot of faith in the cars that Tesla builds, because I would have been a little bit hesitant to use my customers as research and development on, you know, such a brand new piece of technology, because really, as we started talking at the beginning of this program, people have I call them a goodwill bucket with their vehicle.
Sure.
Anytime that something really good happens with the vehicle, say maybe they get stuck in the snow, and they're able to get out on their own without having to call in a tow truck, or, you know, they get them through, the car gets it through and lasts just a little bit longer to get to the gas station, you know, that person makes a deposit in the car's goodwill bucket. Anytime something bad happens, they'll take a withdrawal out of that goodwill bucket. So you only have a short amount of time for that customer or that person to give that car personality, whether or not it's going to be a good personality or a bad personality. And once that person has attributed something negative to that vehicle, whether they do it in the form of a bad personality, or maybe the car is a lemon, or, you know, it's just an all-around, you know, failure, it doesn't take very many bad instances for that person to, you know, have negative feelings towards that car. So Tesla must have had a lot of faith in their vehicles when they released them to customers and started using them as part of their research and development, knowing full well that those cars were, you know, it was going to be a decent chance that they're going to perform well for the customers and people were going to love them.
Well, I think that may be the interesting point that you're making, is the immediacy of a connection if something seems to be going wrong, or anticipating a change and taking care of it before it even happens, so that you know you can talk to someone literally, and that people are interested in what your situation is, and of course in the United States, as other parts of the world, we've built up a system where we have very often dealers who are really independent. They're related to the vehicle manufacturer that they obtain cars from, but they're really independent in many respects. And I know recently the relationship between the manufacturer and the dealer and the customer has been a focus. You've talked a bit about that. Others have. I know if I take a vehicle to a dealer, I get multiple contacts to make sure everything is okay, which did not happen 20 years ago.
No, you're right. And manufacturers are really starting to, they place huge emphasis on the dealers creating those relationships with their customers. And you're right. The manufacturer doesn't necessarily create that relationship. They rely upon the dealer to do it for them. And depending upon the manufacturer, they are very serious about it. I know that Volkswagen, Audi, and actually, a lot of the import manufacturers, especially once you get up into the higher-end ones like Porsche and Mercedes and BMW, they get pretty sticky about the types of relationships that the dealers form with the customers. They have lots of requirements. There is, I'm sure at one point in time, if you've dealt with a dealer, you've had to take a satisfaction survey.
Yep.
To find out, about your experience with the dealer. And if that dealer gets a bad score from a customer, it is taken very, very seriously by the manufacturer.
Right.
And likewise, if they get really, really good scores, the dealer is handsomely rewarded financially for it, too.
Right. Well, okay, I think we've had an interesting discussion about relationships with manufacturers, with the vehicles themselves, et cetera. We have just a minute or two left. What would you like to add before we finish up, Toby?
As the weather continues to fluctuate, just ask everybody to be careful, just because it does seem like it's nice and warm and wet out there. We did have quite a few people come in last week into the shop because of black ice.
Oh, wow, right.
Yeah, run-ins with black ice. So, just be careful out there when you're driving. And if you have any questions or if you think something's not operating correctly on your vehicle, please feel free to come in and ask us or give us a call. Edmunds Import Auto, across the street from the fairgrounds in Palmer.
Okay. Thank you, Toby.
Thank you, Mike.
You've been listening to You Oughta Know with Toby Edmunds. This program is a production of Radio Free Palmer, Big Cabbage Radio, recorded at our studios in Palmer, Alaska. The views and opinions of moderators and guests do not necessarily represent those of Radio Free Palmer, this station, or its underwriters. If you have any comments or questions, please email manager@radiofreepalmer.org.